5 minutes worth of questions.
Great, thank you. Thank you.
If I could have everyone's attention. As usual, have a limited time and like to make the best use of it that we can. My name is David Maher. I'm chair of the Registry Stakeholder Group, and I'm with PIR.org. Welcome, all of you. We're really pleased at the turnout at this now traditional event. And what I'd like to do is start out with introductions. If we could start with the stakeholder group participants, if you could identify yourselves. If microphones are available, that's fine. Otherwise, just shout. Why don't we start at the end down there? Go ahead. Keep on going. The stakeholder participants.
Ching Chao from Asia.
Keith Drazik, Verisign.
Matt Buckland, Registry Pro.
Also Gijsewit, Sita.Arrow.
Vladimir Shadronov from Telnik.
Fabien Betremieux, .Paris.
Greg Aaron, Affilius.
Carolyn Hoover, .Co-op.
Byron Henderson, .Travel.
Rainer Dahlquist, Verisign.
Pat Kane, Verisign.
Jeff Newman, Newstar.
Kathy Kleiman, newly and happily with PIR.
Alexa Rod, PIR.
Ray Fassett, .Jobs.
Caroline Greer, .Mobi.
Ken Stubbs, Affilius.
Brian Cute, Affilius.
Edmund Chung, .Asia.
Nacho Madoff, .Cat.
Chuck Gomes, Verisign.
Gary Karp, .Museum.
Dirk Krzyżanowski, .Berlin.
Mike Blaine, .Co-op.
Thank you. I think that... Okay, thank you. Peter, do you want to...
Do you want an introduction of board members or do the same for board or...
I think that would be helpful.
In which case, I'm Peter Dengak Thrash, the chair of the board, can I just say how fantastic it is to have the .gay and .paris and other intending registry operators here. Well done. Thanks.
Which are we going to go, left or right?
Go that way. You ready?
Hey, Rod Beckstrom, ICANN.
Harald Alvestrom, ICANN board.
Thomas Norton, the IETF liaison to the board.
Dennis Jennings, .board.
George Sadowski, ditto.
Vandis Cartesini.
Jean-Jacques Subrenard, ICANN board.
Suzanne Wolf, Root Server Advisory Committee, liaison to the ICANN board.
Raimundo Becca, a former member of the ICANN board in my last presence as a board member.
Mike Silver.
Kurt Brett, staff.
Gonzalo Navarro, ICANN board.
Rita Rodan, ICANN board.
Hey, thank you. I think we'll plunge right ahead, and we're trying to set a new precedent this year, really departure from our customary procedures. We're going to thank the board for a job well done in a particular area where we're very proud of the way the results turned out.
This Thanks, is David, we can probably go now then.
No.
Carry on.
This is actually, it's the second item on the agenda that was, I hope, made available to all. The post-delegation dispute resolution procedure, the ever-popular PDDRP, and amendments to the proposed draft registry agreement. These were two items of great concern to the registry stakeholder group. We had some teleconferences, and finally a group of us met at Marina Del Rey at ICANN headquarters, and with a really marvelous display of understanding and compromise and willingness to work things out, I think we've gotten almost to the point of a very good working arrangement on both of these topics. So we thank you. We thank the board for and staff particularly for its role in making this work.
Quickly respond to that.
Please.
Just wanted to single out, I guess, John and Kurt for the staff role in dealing with that. We have to say there wasn't much board input other than, you know, asking that this be done. And so John and Kurt really get the credit. So if those guys can just take a bow. Thanks, guys.
The next topic is one that I'm afraid a little more controversial, and that's vertical integration. This is number one on the agenda. I'm grateful to Bruce Tonkin and Rita Rodan for helping me put together the agenda for today's meeting. This was the number one item. And I think probably the best way to proceed on this, instead of trying to put together an agreement or a consensus which does not exist, we'd like to hear from you, the directors, any questions that you might have, any topics that you think we might be able to address and help you understand why this is such a knotty problem. Sure, please.
I'm just very conscious that we don't want to have a discussion today that replicates the work that's going on in the working group. And I don't think the board is prepared for that or that that's terribly helpful. Perhaps the question that we were asked by the non-commercial was, you know, does the board mean what it said in setting the scene up, and what will we do if we get advice from the working group, and what will we do if we don't get advice from the working group? I'd be very happy to address that kind of level question. I think the answer we gave to the non-commercial constituency can be repeated here. And the answer is yes, the board actually did mean what it said and selected a relatively unpalatable default option on the basis that there was a working group with a PDP underway, and if that would come up with a result, we'd be happy to include that in the final outcome. The next exercise really is what happens if the working group doesn't come up with anything. I think we'd rather hope that it did and put our efforts into seeing that it can come to some conclusion. Perhaps the more likely conclusion is the working group may come back to us with two or three options and ask us to choose. And I think at that stage, we would probably then have to have a really good think and a really look back at the debates. So that's the kind of level discussion I think we'd rather have rather than getting into any of the detail that we went through at that very good debate that Brian and others took part in back in Seoul. I think, you know, we've been through that and we understand the issues.
Well, that's very helpful. Rita, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think what I've heard the last week and maybe a couple months is that the board has a certain position on this, and the board really doesn't, in the sense that this issue, the first time I think we saw some papers was last summer, and I basically said to people, well, where is this coming from? Why are we starting to look at this point in time down this new GTLD process? So I just want to kind of level set everyone, at least in here, that the board didn't raise this issue, right? It came from the community. So the board doesn't want to have to make any decision on this. Whoever sort of raised the issue needs to resolve it and get together with other constituencies and tell us what needs to happen.
Would any other questions or thoughts on that anyone would like to raise? I just what Peter said to me is very interesting, the possibility that there will be no single consensus position. This is a purely personal viewpoint, but what I'm hearing, I'm not on the working group, or at least not as active as the others. There are such disagreements that a consensus may not arise, and you may be faced with a majority-minority view or even a 50-50. What you do then, do I hear Tom, please?
Let me just add something. This would be my perspective. I mean, when Peter sort of suggested if we got three options, I don't think the board wants options. I think that's a case where the process has failed and you're wedged, and then we would feel forced to step in and maybe rectify it. It's not something we want to do. We want you guys to come up with an approach that has some sort of reasonable, you know, consensus of the community so that we can just approve it and say everybody's happy. That's the ideal.
Bruce, please.
I think one of the things is to try and understand what can the board do to help, say, the working group reach convergence, and is there anything that can be done in that area? So there's probably two components of that. I think one is, you know, there's lots of meetings happening this week. I know there was a meeting yesterday with some of the GNSO Council and some of the board members sharing ideas. There's been various dinners. What would be very useful for me is, and this is obviously not specific to the registry constituency, but for in the public forum on Thursday to have a representative from the working group just give an update on where the working group is up to after at the end of this week. So if you think about, I think the public forum's Thursday morning, I'd love to just get a précis of, hey, the working group's got these three options and can't decide, or the working group's got a preferred option and a minority report, just sort of where it's at. And if there is any value, there was a suggestion, I think, yesterday from John Nevitt saying, you know, maybe there should be at least scheduling a summit potentially in September to resolve any outstanding issues related to new GTLDs. And so it'd be great to understand at the end of this week what that summit might look like. Is there enough value in the board asking the staff, hey, go ahead and organise a summit that might cover not just that issue but other issues? Or do people feel at the end of this week that, you know, they're 90% there on the new GTLD guidebook and, you know, there's no need to resource a summit? So I think I'm particularly interested in what would be a step between, say, here and the meeting that we have in Colombia in terms of resources or staff support that would actually help that particular working group reach a conclusion.
Chuck, do you want to?
Yeah, I want to back up to a statement Thomas made. for as long as I've been working on policy development, I really have objected to calling the failure to reach consensus as a failure. It doesn't mean a failure. It means there wasn't consensus or we weren't able to find it. In this particular case, because of the very short time frame, and we respect the need for that, it may be because it would take longer. Actually, though, I'm very encouraged by the progress of the working group. I'm also not actively participating, although as council chair, I'm on the list. I'm encouraged that they're making good progress. Will they come to one position, or will they have a split decision and have two? I won't predict that now. I want to give them all the optimism I can. But if they don't, I wouldn't consider that a failure. It's just a fact that it demonstrates that there isn't one position that there is consensus on. And that's good information that we can all use to develop something that may work, okay? So, again, I just caution all of us to look at failure to reach consensus as a bad thing. It's actually good information about where the community is.
Thanks, Chuck. Mike, I think you had something to say.
Thanks, David. I would like to agree with what Chuck is saying, because I think
failing to reach consensus sometimes is an indication that you've come to either a hard stop or a fork in the road. And I would suggest that either this grouping or as a message to the broader grouping, have a look at what the CCNSI and the GAC did around IDNs and the development of the IDN PDP. When they realized that they weren't going to get there in time to meet the demands of people, they didn't say, okay, we'll deal with it or push it up to the board. They came up with a fast-track proposal, which was accepted by the board. It's provided a release valve, which has allowed for the initial CCIDNs to proceed while the broader issues are being debated, and maybe that's taking too long, and maybe it needs a little bit of a shove in the back. But what we can't have is a situation which says, well, then either current environment rules, or fine, then we're not going to launch new Gs until we've got consensus. Then there's got to be an interim step. While, as you say, we've come to some sort of fork in the road, we need to walk another direction, we need to see how we integrate it. There's more time involved, it's not a failure. But we've got to have something quick and fast that we can start looking at while that non-failure proceeds to evolve.
Yeah, Chuck, just to respond to your comment, I agree with you and I apologize. Using the term failed, you know, it's probably the wrong way to state it, and it really depends on what the actual result is and looking at the details, and making a generalization at this point is really premature and not helpful.
If there isn't a consensus on a single position, it probably would be helpful if there was a rationale documented for the one or two or three, rather than an assertion, a rationale. Then it could be analyzed.
Can I follow up with that, David? I had a nice session with the two co-chairs of the working group yesterday, and I advised them, not that I determine what they do, but I suggested that if that does happen, exactly what you said should be produced in their report so that there's good data that can be used by those that do have to come to some sort of interim or, you know, first-round solution or something like that. So totally agree, and the co-chairs were very supportive of that.
Harold? Just want to state something obvious, that we're not asking for anyone to come to consensus on what the ideal solution is. We're asking for coming to consensus on what the board should tell staff to put into the DAG for this round of the GTLD program, which is hopefully a more limited scope, and we might be thinking more in terms of risk management than of perfection. I hope it's obvious.
Kathy Kleiman, and I am on the working group, 2,000 emails into the working group. But I just wanted to share that although it's the differences that keep arising and that you'll be hearing a lot about, there's been an awful lot of work and an awful lot of crystallization of the issues, a lot of hard discussion of the issues, crystallization and convergence. So there's still some key disagreements, but we've come a long way, and hopefully we'll be sharing that with you of how far we've come from where we started, and we may not make it completely. And also that the working group has the same kind of idea, an immediate time frame and a longer time frame. And so that instruction is very useful, that we should continue to think about both. Thank you.
Ken Stubbs of Phileas. I think the suggestion that was made for if we arrive at a situation where we cannot have this consensus, I think it's extremely important to not only rely on the information that you're receiving from the ICANN staff observer, but I think it would be a very good idea, and I don't mean that Margie isn't doing a great job. I just think that you get that the perspectives and the basis behind the perspectives need to be clearly outlined so that the board can understand, if you're not able to totally agree, what the reasoning is behind this. At least it gives you more insight It's not just a bunch of people in a room duking it out trying to get one thing. You know, everybody has these concerns one way or the other, issues one way or the other, and I think it would make it much clearer for you if you understood exactly why.
Jeff, go ahead.
Jeff Newman, New Star, and probably author of 1,000 of the 2,000 emails. okay, not that many, but I'm also obviously on the working group, and I do think we have made a lot of progress. I do think the issues are much more narrow now, you know, whereas we started at one point with, you know, completely closed the space on the one side or no integration, and on the other side it was full integration. I think we've definitely narrowed it down and got to a much smaller space. But even within that space, there are some diametrically opposed positions that I'm not sure certain players would concede on, because it has a real economic impact on them to concede to that. In other words, if they went with one solution, it would completely prevent them from being in the market at all. So it would be very difficult to convince them to go to the other side. So I do think at one point we're going to have some sort of disagreement. But one of the other points I wanted to make was that I know that there's been some interactions with the GNSO Council on this issue, and I would ask of the board that since the issue is with the working group as opposed to the council, that if the board has some questions on it or does want to hear from people on the working group, that it goes to the working group directly. Only a few counselors are actually on the working group, and sometimes I've heard some things where some counselors have said some things that aren't even being discussed in the working group level. So to that extent, if that's possible.
Look, just to be clear, there should be no interactions between the board and the council on this. I'm not sure what you're referring to, and there should be even less interaction between the board and the working group. I'm not actually happy that there are board observers on the working group, but they joined up before they understood the position. The board should stay is going to stay right out of this until you've finished. So I'm going to follow up with you later on to find out what you're talking about with interactions between the board and the council on this topic. If they go beyond questions like how you're getting on and are you going to have an answer, I want to know about it. Rita.
So one of the things that I think will also be helpful in hearing a lot of different points of view on this issue, which I think is important, is not only a rationale for what each position is in this report, but what the harm is, right? Because I'm kind of with Jeff. I know everybody at the 50,000-foot level is it's going to destroy competition, it's going to prevent people, it's going to allow monopolies, whatever, the different kind of generalized statements. But I think what also would be really helpful for the board is specifically what happens. So how will this position lead to abuses for consumers or for registrars or for registries? What are the real crystal issues? Because if you just say some people are opposed because it could create monopolies at one level, or some people are opposed because it'll be anti-competitive at another level, that's not so helpful for the board either. I think I'm kind of with Jeff, maybe being around this organization for a few years. I feel this is thorny, and I know there's a really short time frame. So I'm with Chuck. I don't see a lack of consensus as a failure at all, but we need to figure out if and how we move forward. And so I think the best way to do that is to try to be as specific as possible in what you ultimately send up to both the council and the board. Because, right, there's an interim council step here. And so I think that as clear as everyone can be and as specific and really down in the details on what exactly are the issues would be really helpful.
And I'd like to add to what Jeff said that there are economic issues, obviously. you can't deny that. But at the same time, there are public interest issues, the welfare of the consuming public, the Internet users, and that is certainly one of the many factors that's being considered by the working group. Rod.
Yeah, I just want to chime in and say I'm really impressed by the work, not only the work that's going on here, just from the sense it sounds like there's progress being made, because I know with a certain passion for economics personally, this is – probably the single largest economic issue on the table in the entire ICANN process right now. I mean, this is enormous, and there's a lot at stake for all parties. So I just want to recognize how healthy the process seems to be in terms of at least mutual respect and the level of dialogue, you know, being at the business and professional level of keeping things focused on the economics, and that that's a really a great model for the community. And it seems to me as well, I mean, there is the fallback position here is what the board decided, right? And so obviously, hopefully, we hope that's not where we're going to go and that, that you can work out a resolution. And clearly, that's up to you. And the staff role, obviously, is simply to implement that resolution. And I made some short remarks yesterday based on some coaching, you know, from Kurt and John Jeffries and others, simply to say, if you come up with a solution, we will build a model to implement it. Okay. Now we may have to then go size it and figure out, you know, if is it a hugely different staffing or model than what we do things on today. But we will implement it because it had at least been floated as a question from the working group to staff of what's the range of willingness that you have or flexibility to build new enforcement mechanisms or new compliance mechanisms. And I can say we will do it. I mean, we look at that as a positive and constructive challenge to us. If the existing structures that we have don't fit what you might propose, we are absolutely willing to look at building something new or modifying what we have. But we hope that that implementation will not ever hold you back from coming to a solution if you've got consensus as a community, because we feel confident and that and we will do our absolute best to implement whatever you come up with. But again, I just really appreciate you taking this on and recognizing what a big issue it is. Thank you.
Yeah, just like one real quick response here, Rod. And I appreciate the economic argument, but I think it goes, as David pointed out, much deeper than that. There is a paramount difference between a registry and a registrar. Registrar is a business. A registry represents a trust that's been vested in a specific organization by the ICANN community. The basis for that trust, that vestment, is in fact the contract between ICANN and the registry. And there's a principal obligation to the community to ensure that that trust is managed properly for the benefit of the community. And as a result of that, there may be economic benefits. There are, as you know, many of the CCD TLDs do not look at it like that, but they don't look at the economic benefit. Their primary concentration is the benefit to the community, Peter. So this, in many ways, is why I'll call it an overarching issue, but it's the primary concern that many of us look at. So when you're looking at a certain perspective, please keep that in mind. The concern about, you know, it's kind of like if you take care of your community, they're going to take care of you. So it's really something that's paramount with many of us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think this may be a good opportunity to move along so that we can get through more of our agenda, unless I hear a strong dissent. The next item is the in the new GTLD procedures, the question of confusingly similar names that are chosen by applicants for or potential applicants for new GTLDs. Edmund Chung, if I could ask you to comment.
Sure. Thank you, David. Well, I guess this is a really sort of like a heads up to the board. This has been actually I've brought this up as far back as Cairo, but it's slowly finally getting to a place where it's it could be dealt with. Essentially, realize that there's an issue with the DAG that for confusingly similar strings, it's actually prohibited. So in the, especially in the cases for, let's say, an applicant looking for to apply for an IDN version, which may be considered confusingly similar to an existing or the same in the same round, even if an applicant wants to apply for two or more strings that may be considered confusingly similar, that may cause an issue because only one is being allowed. So there's a that there needs to be some consideration for handling this situation under certain conditions. For example, if it's the same applicant or the same registry operator. And the suggestion right now, which is this sort of in a form of letter that is out for public comments from the GNSO Council, is to handle that issue in the extended evaluation process, similar to some other extended evaluation things for extended evaluation. So that's really the gist of it.
Edmund, I assume this is driven in part by what's occurred in relation to variants for the Chinese TLDs. Is it that situation where, for those who don't know, we've been asked to approve two TLDs for effectively the name of China, one in the old script and one in the new, and the allegation would be that those two are confusingly similar to each other, but they're both going to the same applicant and they both mean the same thing, so there in fact is no confusion. Now, the same thing's going to happen, I assume, in modified Chinese and old other Chinese for, you know, dot silk or dot something else. Is that what's driving this, or is it something else?
No, I think it's also important to make a distinction between the two, because they are two very different issues, at least the way I see it. In terms of variant, it's a linguistic issue, in the sense of confusingly similar. It could be a situation. I think Chuck brought up a rather interesting example in one of our discussions, is like .cym versus .com may be considered a confusing similar by some, but if .com is okay with it, or, you know, in certain cases, it may be an acceptable application. So I think the variant issue is very specific to linguistic issues, like in the Chinese case, it's traditional Chinese and simplified Chinese, and they're considered to be really the same thing. But in the case of confusingly similar, it may be just in certain perception that things are confusingly similar, and it may not be the same language.
So just to follow up then, how under the current rules is the variant situation treated in relation to two applications for silk in Chinese, one how they're treated as, they're going to be treated at the moment as two separate applications? If different parties applied for them, would they have to duke it out?
Or
does the same applicant have to pay double sets? So how we, so that's the first question, how are we dealing with that? And the second one, is the second case, the CYM versus .com, are you suggesting that we need to write in some kind of consent process by other applicants that will alleviate some of the dispute resolution mechanism or evaluation process?
Just on the first item first, I guess I'd like to congratulate the staff actually to include the variant consideration in DAC 4. So no is the answer. Right now, it's at least in DAC 4, it's one application in the case of IDN variants. In the second case, I think there is a little bit more to it, and which is why
that point, cause I think you just need to be a little bit clearer. Might be one application, but isn't the concept that the variant gets reserved? Like, they're not both delegated, are they?
So they're two different
questions, but
they're delegated. I mean, we're relying on internal mechanisms.
Peter's question is, if you get a simplified and traditional Chinese application in the GNSO new GTLD process, what is the outcome under the current guidebook? That's what Peter's asking.
Edmund,
so it's not a case of whether it's a single application, it's Peter's saying, what actually happens? Do they get both names or one or one and reserve? That's his question.
No, I think we may be getting more deeply into this than we really intended in the first place. The issue of variance is not really on the table here. What we're concerned about is the fairly narrow view of the current guidebook that says that only visual similarity will be considered, and in some cases where there may be visual similarity, the immediate sort of black-white choice is, oh, they're visually similar, it won't work, you can't have both of them. But in fact, the underlying circumstances are such that visual similarity doesn't count. There is not a confusion issue that arises from the two. So, yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
So if you looked at the algorithm as an example, and I'm surprised this is the highest, but because I've looked at like COM and CEM, and the highest percentage I found, believe it or not, is with .IETF. So if I applied for .JEF, that is 84% similarity to .IETF, which is the highest I've found on any correlation.
So write them both. They're very similar. There's two curly tops or a bottom, and that's the only difference between those two things in lowercase. In serif, in a serif.
Well, so that's an example where, in theory, that's one of the highest I've seen at 84%. And what if they said because it's visually similar, they wouldn't allow the .jef to go through because .ietf, but they have completely different meanings. I don't know what the meaning of .jef would be, but I'm still trying to find the meaning of life. But so I guess the letter is basically to try to get some kind of confirmation that other factors would be considered if that were to be the case.
Thanks. Well, Chuck.
Yeah, and I'll be brief on this. But first of all, with regard in the applicant guidebook, it requires variant tables in the GTLD process, just like it does in the CCTLD process. And I do agree with Edmund. That's a different issue than the one we put on the table. Right now, in the applicant guidebook, there is extended evaluation is not allowed for the confusing similarity issue. In the initial evaluation, the only thing that is evaluated with regard to confusing similarity is visual similarity. In the dispute process, other forms are considered. But in that initial process right now, it could be that two strings could be determined, and it's not only the algorithm. In fact, the algorithm is just an indicator, and then there's a panel that determines whether they think it is. But it could be that you have two strings that are determined to be confusingly similar, and one of them is disallowed, but there's no opportunity to challenge that in cases where the similarity may not be detrimental. And part of the GNSO recommendation was detrimental confusing similarity. All the letter that is under consideration by the council says is that please consider allowing extended evaluation for these unique circumstances, and that's out for public comment right now.
Thanks, Chuck. Rita, go ahead.
You know, I now understand sort of where you guys are going, and I think that's really helpful. Just to put my lawyer hat on for a second, you know, in the Second Circuit, which is where I practice in New York City, there have been varying factors of what confusing similarity is. And I hate that confusing similarity because it's a legal term in the U.S. about trademark infringement. And each different region of the U.S. actually has a bunch of different factors you have to consider. So, for example, in New York, actual confusion. So if I do, you know, Jeff's ice cream and he has Jeff's whatever toy store, and somebody thinks that there is confusion and my ice cream people go buy, you know, a toy at his shop, and I can prove that he's diverting 50% of my customers, that doesn't necessarily mean people are being – that doesn't mean there's confusing similarity of the strings under New York law. So there's a number of factors. I think the most recent Second Circuit case has maybe six factors that all will lead to things that are confusingly similar. So it is a lot more than visual similarity, and I think it would be helpful – to think about if we can integrate that into an earlier adjudication of whether things are confusingly similar.
Thanks. I think we could move along. There's a lot in DAG 4, and it was also suggested that we ask you, the directors and staff, what do you need from us on other significant areas of DAG 4. Can you help us? Where do you think we can provide guidance? Any volunteers?
Yes. I think if you're asking staff, I should ask Kurt to help out here since he's really the expert on this topic. I mean, Kurt, you didn't give me a specific ask that I know of coming into this meeting. Is there anything, what specifically would you like the stakeholder group to help you with on in terms of feedback on the DAG 4? Is that the question?
Well, it's staff as assisting the board. In particular, I'd like to hear from board members, not to, because we are going to hear from Kurt later this afternoon, and I'm sure he will address the problem more than adequately.
Sorry,
that's okay. Are there anything as board members that you see that you'd particularly like us to focus on? Perhaps not. If not, that's fine. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, this is Jeff. I just want to make a comment, and David covered it a little bit earlier with the post-delegation. I also want to express my gratitude to ICANN staff for following a suggestion that we had on the creation of a legal working group. We used a different term, and I can't remember what it was to describe that group. But essentially, a number of us got together in the community and worked together with ICANN staff on some language for the amendment issue. And while that was a very contentious issue for the last several ICANN meetings, I just want to express my gratitude that I think we really have gotten to a great solution. I think both sides, ICANN staff and the registries, developed a version that I think is going to work for all of us. And I'm going to say it again at the public forum, since I'm usually most of my comments are usually fairly critical, I do want to also make the good comments. And I think it's an excellent model to follow going forward for issues like that involving contracts or legal issues, is to continue using the legal working group at an early stage where I think we can resolve issues much faster than it took for this one. So I want to thank everyone as well.
Jeff, thank you very much. That means a lot. The staff work, you know, incredibly hard, as you well know, on these issues, sometimes working day and night to get ready for these meetings and others. So that's very, very graciously received. And Kurt's in the room to hear that, and we'll make sure it's passed along to others as well. But thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll say it again at the public forum so everyone can hear it on the record.
Okay. I think we ought to move along and talk about the budget and the operating plan, which is the next major topic on our agenda. We're preparing comments. Chuck has been instrumental in putting together quite a detailed list. Chuck, do you want to briefly tell us?
Sure. And I'm not going to go through the various comments. Actually, a lot of the comments are similar, so it's not so much that it's a long list. But I want to start by saying, and I suspect that this will be the start of our public comments on the draft budget and operating plan, we've really come a long ways in the budget and operating plan. A few of us go back, way back to the beginning, and for years in what used to be called the budget advisory group, we were asking for more detail. We can't determine enough. And I compliment Kevin and his team and the board finance committee for really improving that detail tremendously. Now, I do think as I went through the budget and we're looking at this as a registry stakeholder group as a whole, that there are still some places where more detail is needed, and we will note that in our comments and try to be specific. Just to cite one example for our discussion here today, it's a very simple example, but the GNSO requested some funds for Who Is Studies. And, of course, there are lots of other things that the GNSO is working on, like GNSO improvements recommendations. But it was not possible in the draft budget itself to figure out what was in there. Now, again, compliments to staff. I asked the question, and I got the answer. And that's great, okay? And we will point out some areas where additional detail. There's some areas in the draft budget that the detail, in my opinion, is great. You can really figure out. There are other areas which we will point out in our comments where additional detail would really help us in doing an adequate review of the budget. And so we will communicate those. But again, I want to end on the compliment that we have it's been improved so much, and I really compliment Kevin and his team and all of staff, because I know all of staff and the board feed into that process. So my compliments in that regard.
Thanks, Chuck. Can I just add that the Board Finance Committee also has been doing a lot of work as individually, and perhaps I know there's a couple of those directors here. If they wanted to add something, now might be a good time. No? Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, the Finance Committee, working with Kevin, drove a lot of this, both the functional analysis and the so-called EAG. When I joined the Finance Committee, there was only the chart of accounts, the five headings, which told you nothing. It would be very helpful to get lots of feedback on what the next iteration of the analyses should be. One of the challenges to the finance people is, as soon as you provide some transparency on the financial information, people want more, and that's right and that's correct, and that's what it's there for. And there are lots of analyses and graphs and so on. Now, we're not going to encourage the finance people to react to whimsical requests for this, that, and the other, although they do react to specific requests very well, but rather to consider it more completely and say, what new, so in the next iteration of this financial analysis, what do you need to see and how should it look like? Because I'm pretty confident the finance people will produce it.
Bruce, please.
Thank you. I think the other sort of thing that's changing, and we've, again, I've been an observer on the Finance Committee the last 3 years and it's still there, is really the shift to almost providing what in a corporation would be sort of departmental budgets, but in a ICANN sense, there are departmental budgets within the staff of ICANN, but it hasn't been clear on what the budget items are for, say, the GNSO or the ALAC or the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, etc. And one of the things that is about how you handle information. So I think probably the next step is effectively almost giving you a GNSO budget that has more detail in it, and that budget cycle starts much earlier. So some of the discussion that we had in the meeting this week is the staff would actually start probably 3 or 4 months earlier at an operating level budget, certainly at the agreeing what the line items are. You might argue about what the numerical number is, but at least you agree the model. So here's the main line items that you need to see in the GNSO. So let's agree that early. And then you might, as the process goes, argue about the numerical number, whether it's, 200,000 or 300,000 for a who is study. But at least you've agreed that you've got a line item for who is studies. Now, that level of detail is going to be of no interest to ESSAC, for example. So it's really the staff probably working in detail with a particular group, and then that gets aggregated into what the board sees as the finance report. Because board directors won't care whether you've got, $20,000 for GNSO breakfasts or something. The GNSO might. So obviously it all gets aggregated up, and that final document's much more high level. But I think at what I'd call a departmental budget is starting the process early with staff, agreeing what the line items are on that budget, then filling it in with numbers, and then, going backwards and forwards on that a little bit, and then that aggregates up into the budget that the board sees, which is much more aggregate.
Thank you, Bruce, and that's right on target, I think. But I want to qualify everything I'm saying, and that I think that the registry stakeholder group agrees with me on, and that is that we're not looking for micromanagement of the budget, but enough detail so we can determine things that are important. For example, I mentioned the GNSO improvements, and the board passed the recommendations that had come up through the GNSO and so forth, and we're really getting close to finishing the implementation recommendations and all of those, and there's some really critical things like GNSO website improvements. I don't know how many of you have been to the GNSO website, but it is in dire need of improvements. And so to be able to do what you're saying and see, oh, look, that they put for this, this is good to see, because that's going to really help us do our job. And other GNSO improvement recommendations. So that sounds fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Ken, go ahead.
Yeah. Being a CPA, although I don't practice that much anymore, I always remember that a budget is, in essence, a quantified plan of action. So when somebody asks you for more budget information, what they're really wanting to know is, what are you planning on doing? How are you planning on doing it? I mean, and I think as a member of the community, you need to remember that this is almost, in essence, an obligation. How do we know how ICANN plans to operate? Very simply, we can go to the budget, because what's happened is the staff has developed an action plan for the next 12 months. Now we have to quantify that action plan, and the more information that we get, the easier it is for us to see how staff plans on reaching the goals that they've set for themselves, that they've talked to the board, and that the and I just think that's something that you got to keep in the back of your head. It isn't just numbers, but a plan. Thank you.
Thanks. And speaking of which, I think that moves us smartly to the next topic on the agenda, which is the DNS cert proposal and the security, stability, and resiliency project. And here again, we'd be very happy to hear from members of the board if there is something in particular that you want from us. As I understand it, a working group is being formed on the DNS cert subject. Is there anything else that you're looking for, that are questions you have to us, our interest in this? It is important, obviously. It's Rod, go ahead.
Sure. Well, yeah, it is our understanding that a working group will probably be formed this week, which is a very good way to move the dialogue, discussion, feedback forward. There's also a Birds of Feather meeting, I think, this afternoon at 6 o'clock. Is it this room or right downstairs? That's happening. From the staff perspective, we just want to see a really good, healthy community process help to define and shape this thing, and we remain open to see what comes out of it, and we'll do our best to support the processes that come forward.
Thanks. Okay, we can move along then. The last definite item on the agenda is the affirmation of commitments. Brian Cute is the chair of the current review team that's operating. Brian, do you want to speak that?
Thank you, David. I just want to say first that this has been a very good week. From my perspective, the review team came into Brussels with a very full agenda to meet with basically each constituent body and group within the ICANN structure, for the purpose of beginning to do our data collection phase of our work. We have a tight schedule, as most of us do on many projects. We have to deliver recommendations by December. But at a very high level, all I can say is that I have been personally very encouraged working with the people who are on the team, having met now since April a few times face-to-face. There is a very clear focus, a clear professionalism, a very distinct desire to deliver something useful. And also a recognition that, you know, many of us are inside the ICANN tent, and a clear recognition that we need to be balanced and thoughtful in our approach to this exercise. So that for me is the sentiment of the team. And we've heard very good feedback this week already in our discussions with the board. We had some very good areas of discussion. I felt as though, walking out of a few of the interactions with different constituent bodies, that the outlines of recommendations are already beginning to form in my mind. And while the jury is still out, I think that a few perhaps very strategically oriented suggestions for improvement might end up going a very long way at the end of this process when all is said and done.
Thanks, Brad. And in connection with that, one of the concerns of the registry stakeholder group is our continued representation on the next two review teams that are being formed. I understand there's some question as to whether the same number of representatives will be allowed in the two new review teams. We feel very strongly that as the registries, our voice should be heard on both of these topics, both the WHO IS and the SSR. Peter?
Can I just comment first on, about this, because I don't have anything to do with the selection of the numbers, and Rod can defend any numbers that are actually floating around, just to say that having served as I have done on one of the teams, and I think Brian might agree, the reality is it's not the voice on the team that's important. The information that's largely coming in is from the face-to-face meetings and the submissions. In fact, I think you want to be very careful about putting someone on that review team who's going to go there with some kind of axe to grind or some kind of carrying some kind of flag. I think you should seriously think about appointing someone who's going to be neutral, objective, even from outside the community. Is there some independent intellectual expert? Is there a professor of somewhere that could act as your... I think about what you want on the review team, and it doesn't have to be the most vigorous champion of this particular group. Because that's not what the team is doing. First of all, the team has to function as a group and determine its own methodology, and then they have to go out to the community and get input. So, as I say, think about... And similarly, just the number of voices that you have on that team is also no measure of improving the effectiveness of the team or improving the accuracy of the work. So don't get hung up on numbers or representation. Thanks.
Thanks. Caroline? Ken?
Yeah, you don't mind if I respond to your comment there, Peter. I am inclined to agree with you. The only thing that I have problem understanding is if you look at the composition of the next WHO IS evaluation team, there are two members of law enforcement out there. So they're clearly coming in with an advocacy. So all I'm saying is that there needs to be a balance of perspectives on that group so that when the information is received, it doesn't get filtered in a direction that has a bias. So I am totally in agreement with what you have to say, but I think that sometimes optically it just may not necessarily appear that way.
Rita?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that the statement, David, because I hear what Ken's saying. I think a lot of times what we've heard, and even in the limited interaction with Brian's team, people feel as though on various levels and in various fora that they have a stake in an issue, and a lot of other people that just come to the mic start to derail discussions. And so there's a lot of theoretical and not a lot of practical. So I hear what you're saying, and I think you guys do have a lot of, obviously, incentive to participate actively in these discussions to the extent that there's a concrete action that will come out of that that you all will have to implement. So I hear what you're saying, and I do think your participation will be really important in as part of that process.
Mike?
Sorry to chime in on this. I'd be more than happy to have a review team comprised of everybody at this meeting, just so long as they self-fund all of their travel and involvement.
No way. Chuck, go ahead.
Mike, that's an interesting comment because I know in part of the SOAC team that has been working with Giannis and communicating on this very issue with different composition models for the team, that funding is certainly an issue. And I don't think I can only speak for myself right now. I think my company would support me too. Hopefully the registries would as well. But if there's some way of helping with the funding issue so that that doesn't become an administrative limitation, I think we'd be willing to work on that. Now, there are a lot of problems with that. How do you do it without being perceived as buying a slot or how do you avoid conflicts of interest? Those are complicated issues, so I don't know if that's easy, but Giannis and I have had a few conversations, and I don't know if there's a way to do that, but we're not ignorant of the funding issue and the budget cutbacks.
An additional 1 cent per domain, possibly?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
An additional 1 cent per domain, possibly? Sorry, I shouldn't be getting there.
That was mean.
For .info and .biz?
Yeah.
Well, the final line item on our agenda is other topics for discussion from the board. Do you want to?
I want to pick up on the suggestion that John Nevitt made about a summit meeting, and I want to just distinguish it from the way Bruce presented it. come to the timetable for new GTLDs. We've now got the DAG 4 out for public comment. That comment's going to close, and staff are going to work. There's summer holidays, I think, for those of you who live in the Northern Hemisphere. And so the earliest that we think we can get our attention back onto this topic, we've scheduled the traditional board retreat is going to be totally taken over, and that's in September, to try and clean out any remaining new GTLD issues so that as soon as possible after that, the applicant guidebook can come out with timetable, opening date, etc. So that's the plan. If we don't make that, I suppose in the back of my mind there's the knowledge that a couple of months after that we'll get to Cartagena. But I would really like to get to Cartagena with things actually done. So the suggestion from John is, would a summit just the day before, or 2 days or a day before the board was meeting, would that be of any assistance, knowing that, you know, the board's meeting tomorrow and voting as a final incentive to come together on some issues? I'm a bit jumpy about allowing current issues such as vertical integration to go into that process. My suggestion would really be that it would be any new topics, but let's not get hung up on that. How do people think that a summit meeting of that sort, just on new GTLDs, a couple of days before or a day before a board retreat to try and close these issues down, would that be helpful?
Mike?
And David, as you know, we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago as John raised the issue with us, and I think our general agreement was that if there are still some significant areas of work, that might be very useful. So I think that has some potential. I think we have to be really careful of what we mean by a summit, and that's not something we have to resolve here. But I had a fairly lengthy conversation with Bertrand and his idea of a summit. And let me tell you, I'm one of those that really respects Bertrand. He's a sharp guy, and we can dialogue, and he listens, and he recognizes some things. We can't open up new issues. We can't start the policy process over, or we can't invalidate everything that's been done. But to the extent that we can define it carefully and make sure the participants know what the objectives are, and what the ground rules are in terms of not bringing up new things, et cetera, and I won't make a full list, it might very well have value.
Very conscious of not opening it up on the basis that all those who want to slow it down are going to just see that as one final opportunity to throw more grit into the gearbox. So, you know, one more final chance to argue some of the things that we thought were close. So, point very well taken, and yes, anything we do in this area has to be very carefully crafted. And it may be that the risk of that is so great that we actually don't do it at all.
So, Peter, quick question. Does Kurt unfortunately left? When does staff anticipate the second economic report coming out? Because I think that is a rather critical aspect, and while I do share some of the concerns expressed by Chuck regarding a reopening, I think Bertrand raised a number of valid points of, for the first time, we began to look at some of the economic analysis here about public benefit, and I think what the community needs to be very sensitive to is if all we're doing is the new GTLD train is going forward and we're going to launch on this date and we're just waiting for a report to be published and not take that and feed that back into the process, I don't think that would be good for the community as a whole. So I guess my question is, when do you anticipate the economic study and how would we be able to feed that back into a summit or whatever the gathering that we would call it?
Yes, very, very good point, Michael. The goal is to get that the next study done before Cartagena, okay? And we're working on the the scoping terms of reference document and negotiation right now, working with the details in The Economist, since obviously to meet a time frame like that, you have to have a very precise definition of the work to be done. Now, I want to make it clear I'm not committing that it will be done by Cartagena, but that is the goal that we are working towards.
So I guess my question then is, what good would a summit be to wrap up something when we don't have one of the fundamental pieces, which is the economics? So I've heard we'll have it by Cartagena. I'm hearing December, but we want to have a summit to wrap things up by September.
Mike, I'm curious, what fundamental issues do you think the second issue are going to raise that are going to feed back into the process?
Well, for the first time, what I thought was very interesting in the economic study, and something that I've been calling for since 2006, is to look at the market. And they talk in The Economist, they talk about that don't look at the economic value that goes to the benefit of the registry operator, but some of the social benefit that goes to the users. And there was even a line there where they said talks about potentially subsidizing applications. Now, again, this is one of the working groups that we're going to have here in this session. So
I'm waiting for you to answer the question. What are the issues in the study that are going to feed back into the process? We've got an SOAC working group on subsidizing applicants already.
So, I guess let me put the question back to you. If it's not going to feed back anything into the process, why are we doing it and why are we spending the money? We're doing it for a reason, Peter. And if we're just doing it for a reason no, this is an important point, Peter. If we're just doing it for the reason of ticking a box and we're not going to feed it back into the process, that, I think, is a rather concerning and disappointing.
Well, I'm interested in my original question to you. What are the fundamental issues that you think are going to be in the second part of the economic study that need to be fed back into the program?
I will sit there and I will provide my public comments on the first part of the economic study.
But not answer my second question.
I have to sit there and wait to see.
Okay, it's all right.
Yeah, I mean, I can't sit there. I'm not writing the second study, Peter. I mean, we have to wait for that. I did not commission it. I mean, ICANN staff has commissioned it. I was not involved in the drafting of the contract. I don't know what those experts are. You know, and again, just one other point, Peter. You talk about the comment, and this actually ties into an interesting point. It dovetails. You were talking about the appointment of the neutrality or objectivity of the IR of the review teams. But it's very interesting that, and ICANN staff should be applauded for their parameters on how they contract out people for different vendors. There's new vendors. But one of the exceptions that ICANN has retained for exclusivity and not necessarily having to go to a vendor is with regard to economists. There's a specific carve-out in that tender process. Yes, there is, Rod.
Okay. So.
Is there anything else that the board would... Oh, pardon. Go ahead.
If I may. Thank you. I'm sorry to just go back to the affirmation of commitments and review teams, but I had a couple thoughts listening to the conversation. First of all, with regard to Chuck's suggestion that maybe, you know, a company could provide some funding, I think, you know, we all see the possible flaws in that. Peter, your suggestion that maybe the registries get an outside... representative who can represent to a certain degree, but a more extended degree or a distance degree, the interests of this group. I think I understand the thrust of that. I just want to reiterate that I think this is a very serious issue, the objectivity and independence of these review teams. I would like to see us elevate our thinking on these questions. We can look at this exercise through a naive prism, through a prism of realism, or through a prism of cynicism. And being in the first team that's going to deliver something in December, I can see 1,000 ways our output could be viewed as biased or attacked as self-interested. These are very serious issues. If we don't get this right and we don't put some adult thinking to these questions, we're not going to continue to improve. And I feel very strongly about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, David. I'd like to take up Brian's point very directly by saying that the whole AOC, the Affirmation of Commitments, is a huge challenge, but a wonderful opportunity. One of the issues I see, but it's also a challenge for all of us, and certainly for the review team, is that it's a commitment between ICANN and the administration of one government, but at the same time it purports to be a model for international cooperation. So it has a wider scope than only its legal definition, which is the United States of America. So I would say that, and I hope it's helpful if I say this, that actually the standards you have to measure up to should be right from the start international. And I'm sure that's on your mind, Brian. So I'd suggest that at the high-level thinking of your review team, you try to make out what is particularly U.S.-centric and perhaps look beyond that, because there you will find some requirements as well. For instance, several people have said, both Peter and Rod, that it's more than just about review. The AOC has a wider purpose than that. And I would say that confirming and strengthening the international dimension of ICANN is certainly as important. And of course, the challenge then for you, Brian, is I think, how do you step from the review process towards making that a reality? In other words, from analysis to prescription or recommendation. And I think that's really one of the challenges. What I would like to see at the end of the process of review is, well, you know, ticking boxes, this works very well, this doesn't work very well, etc. But keep in mind constantly the international dimension, and that would be of tremendous help for ICANN and its community. Thanks.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. Dennis?
I'd like to make a brief comment, if I may, about objectivity. I have no doubt that the members of the review teams will be objective in their analysis and work. I am not in any way querying their objectivity. But I do have an issue about what standard of accountability or what standard of transparency will be used as the metric. And so I talk about objective standards. When I do talk about objective standards, I am not referring to the objectivity of the review team. I'm not questioning their objectivity or their bona fides in any way. But I just think it would be very helpful if there was a gold standard on transparency out there, that we could be measured against that, because that would be a reference point, and that would be very helpful, I think, to the review team and, of course, to us. So just in case there was any confusion about my use of the word objective, that somehow I was being disparaging of the integrity of the members of the review team, I wanted to make sure that it was clearly understood.
Not understood that way at all. Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you. Well, we didn't have time for the traditional words of wisdom from the chairman and the president, CEO. They apologized, and other commitments have forced them to depart from the meeting. Again, this, I think, has been by far the most useful and productive face-to-face meeting that we've ever had of the stakeholder group and the board and the staff guests. We very much appreciate your taking the time to be with us. This time the agenda was at least in part shaped by input from the board, more direct input, which I think was very helpful. I recall the teleconference we had in the Nairobi meeting, which really I thought didn't work. It was a disappointment to me, at least, and I think the rest of the group, whereas this meeting, to me, unqualified success. All I can say again is thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and your advice and counsel. And it's...
Excuse me, this is the operator. Hello, can anyone hear me?
Yeah. David,